Welcome to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. Produced by LunaWeb, this is show number 34, June 24th, 2010. This is kind of like hump day in a way, but the hump day for the year, not for the week.
Yeah.
You know, as we crest over, the solstice was just the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And now the nights are getting longer, and we're heading over into the second half of 2010.
Of course, next Wednesday will actually be the last day of June, so that will really be mid-year.
Yeah, but remember, we won't be releasing that until Thursday, which will be July.
This is the magic of podcast making.
Yeah. So as far as our to-be-released podcasts, yes, this is the last one to be released in June.
True story.
Unless we're just, for some reason, ahead.
We won't be.
Which doesn't happen much.
No.
So at the hump day of the year, the show here, we've got no lack of things going on in the social realm.
We never do anymore.
Graying up the space. And so you've done some good research. You put it together a nice hit list here. Let's start going through that. So it's like as far as what's happening out there.
Well, first we've got some location-based service news. I don't know if anyone had heard of it. I had not.
Now you may see this abbreviated as LBS. Depending on what geeky thing you're reading. Location-based services.
Oh, location-based
services.
You'll
see LBS.
I was like,
apps.
Pounds?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a different conversation.
Fourware is apparently something that came out before South by Southwest, which was back in March, right?
It was March, mid-March, yeah.
Fourware is the marriage of Foursquare and Google Maps. So it looks like Google Maps, kind of. You go in, you put in an address, and it gives you the venues around the address that you have put in, and you can select whether or not it includes tips that people have put in via Foursquare. And now it has just added GoWalla and Yelp support. So that's something you might want to check out. That seems like it could be a cool integration, those location-based services and Google Maps. And then next on our location-based services, Facebook has released a somewhat vague announcement that their location-based integration is, quote, coming. But
they didn't even say soon?
Not really, no.
Well,
but it's still unclear as to how that's going to work, whether it will be an integration with an existing location-based service or whether it will be all Facebook's thing. But the general consensus is that they wanted to release this earlier because news about it started coming out in March. The New York Times said they were going to release it in April. But then, what was it that happened? Oh, privacy.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they got sidelined by some bad press.
Well, there's some privacy issues that, you know, come into play when you're talking about your location.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like right now, for example, we're at work, and we don't want anybody knowing that, because they'll realize that, you know, your place and then my place could be nice targets for cat burglars. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I'm at home right now as you listen to this, because this isn't live.
Yeah.
So don't come to my house and rob me.
Because you're there with, you know, your droid.
With my...
Your semi-automatic droid.
Exactly, and four dogs, take them out. And that will eat you.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the dogs. I like that. Okay. Well, so with the Facebook thing, you know, and this whole privacy, it's not just information, but it's also where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's apps out there now where you can actually, you know, broadcast your location just continually, and somebody can just monitor you like a honing device. Yes.
Sounds like something parents would find useful.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so their friends learn to give their phones to their buddies or leave them somewhere, you know, at the mall where they're behind the bushes.
Kids will be kids.
While they head to the party. That's put together with their secret group on Facebook, as I learned from a young intern here a couple years back. So anyway, lots of tangents there. Anyhow, the location aspect of privacy, no doubt, is going to be one of the topics that's discussed over at PII 2010. In August, this privacy conference that I'm going to be heading to. So we'll see what shakes out of that. I use Foursquare myself right now, but I don't broadcast it anywhere. The only people I share that information with directly is my other Foursquare buddies. And I don't put it out there on Twitter or on Facebook. But one of the reasons that I'm using it right now is to kind of build up a database of usage and a pattern for myself, because I do believe that where this is all going is it's going to evolve into this promise of proximity marketing. And if it's marketing that's based off of things that I'm interested in and things that I've shown an interest in the past, I don't mind them letting me know that I'm nearby something that I like.
The thing about Foursquare is it sounds so neat, and I actually do use Foursquare a little bit. I only have like 3 friends on it because I don't use it that often. But it still scares me more than Facebook, even with Facebook privacy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Foursquare still scares me because if for some reason it released all of that information and didn't just make it visible to my friends, I would stand to have way more dangerous information out there than anything that I have on my Facebook.
Really? Where you been going, Hansel?
Well, no, it's just, you know.
You shouldn't check in everywhere.
The world
you
doesn't
go.
Need to know where I live and, like, and oh, I don't check in everywhere I go.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's why I'm not using it that much, because it scares me, the potential that if it had a glitch like Facebook has had so many times and just released all of that information to the world for anyone to look up, that would be bad.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. And I know people check in at their own houses.
I know.
You know, in places around the house. I don't do that, but...
I'm in my kitchen.
I don't understand it, but hey, whatever tickles their fancy, right? Anyway, so obviously the LBS, the location-based systems, are going to make its way out and about. Some people often say, hey, maybe Facebook is going to buy one of these guys, one of the big boys in the LBS space, like Gowalla or Foursquare. When I was out at South by Southwest a few months ago, what was that, 4 months ago, 3 months ago? Three, back in March. That was the big thing that was going on, was more consolidating different location-based service type utilizations into one screen, into one view, kind of a mashup. Location-based service mashups seem to be a real popular application there.
Well, that could be what this Foursquare thing becomes.
Yeah, so it's not for what?
For where?
For how? Or for what? Or for who, but for where.
It does sound a little bit Shakespeare. For where.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll have, other supporting accessory products. So, hey, what's going on in, I know, something that you've been antsy about. In the world of Android.
I'm getting an Android phone soon, if I haven't mentioned that, and I am so excited. But I'm glad that I read this study that I came across today. S Mobile released a report. They did some research on, they said 68% of the available applications in the Android app market, and found some surprising results as to what these applications are asking for permissions for. See, now, what you've got to understand is that although the iPhone does kind of a careful screening of their apps and has a lot more hurdles that you have to jump in order to get your app approved in the iPhone app market, Android doesn't have as much of that. You know, Google is not going over these apps with a fine-tooth comb. And so some of these apps are a little more questionable than others. And some of them are asking for permissions that you might not want to give them. For instance, 1 out of every 20 apps can place a call to any number without approval from the user. 3% of apps can send an SMS to any number, and 29% of the apps that they researched request the exact same permission as apps that are categorized as spyware. So this is really something that you need to watch out for. Don't just click through and say, yeah, I'll give this permission. Actually read what it's asking for permission for. And on this study that we will link into the podcast notes, it's got a really comprehensive list of the codes that they will be asking for. You know, permission to read underscore SMS and what that means, you know, because some of these are not very clear intuitively what it is they're asking you to do. And you might not want that application to be able to do that, but you gotta know, you gotta look at it.
So it seems like probably a good rule of thumb as these phones get more complicated and have more and more features is that probably you should treat the phone much like you do Facebook or any other online type of site where you're going to store information and you have some expectation of privacy. You should realize that, hey, maybe for right now, while the world's working the kinks out of all these things, that maybe you don't want to put anything on your phone or on Facebook that is potentially embarrassing or that you wouldn't want somebody else to have either intentionally or maliciously.
Well, I think the other thing to think about with an Android phone is to treat it like you would your desktop computer. You know, when you are downloading something, think that there could maybe be a virus attached to it or spyware or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
in the Mac world, as a Mac user, I've become used to not having to do that.
Did I know this about you?
That I'm a Mac user?
Yeah. Sorry. You don't
Is this a deal breaker? Am I fired?
No, welcome, welcome. We're diverse. That's great. As long as you know here, you know, you have to be like ambidextrous, but like platform wise.
I haven't had a problem yet.
You know, yeah, so it's very good.
But I've gotten used to not really having to screen what it is I'm downloading onto my computer because Mac doesn't really have a history of being susceptible to viruses. But when I get this phone, I will need to treat it as I would treat, I guess, a computer running Windows. And we talked about this a little last week.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, I think it goes the other way, too. You know, here, so Androids, you know, pretty much, hey, they're not checking these things out much. You know, people are putting them on the market. You're relying on other people who have used them, what their comments are. You know, right now there's no rating system for these things other than the feedback from other users and the feedback from all the buddies of the people who actually developed the thing, you know, which are probably the first few reviews that you would find in there pretty commonly. But at the same time, one of the problems this iPhone has had is that they've got this secret list of, you know, these hoops that you have to jump through, but you don't know the hoops are made of smoke.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know what the hoops are. And so, you know, there's some horrendous stories of people who have put a lot of effort and money into developing applications that don't get published. And they just hope that they're doing stuff that's publishable. And it seems to be that there's not, that it's a very subjective thing as to what makes it into iTunes and what doesn't.
There was that story a while back about the Pulitzer Prize winner that tried to submit an app and it got rejected by Apple. And then when they found out that he was a Pulitzer Prize winner, they went, ooh, faux pas.
Yeah.
And went back and allowed his app.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, that's the benefit of them not releasing the criteria that they use, because it seems very soft.
Well, I know one thing that's not allowed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What is that? Flash?
No.
Oh.
Porn.
Oh, porn. Yeah, or variations on the porn theme, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been using the Android now for over a year, and I don't see any porn on the apps when I go to the store.
It's not flooded with junk?
I haven't seen any, you know. I've seen more junk in the iPhone place.
Hmm.
You know, like calendars and stuff, like pin-up calendars and stuff like this. What is that? That's kind of porny. But anyway, who knows? I haven't seen that kind of stuff on the Android. To me, the way I look at Android, and maybe you'll have the same perception as well, is that the Android OS, the Droid phone versus the iPhone, they do the same kinds of things. To me, it seems like the iPhone, you know, is there for play first and then work second. It'll do work, you know, and you can use it in a professional capacity, but it's primarily more of an entertainment type of a device. Whereas the Droid, my experience with that is it's about work first, and it can play too, but it does play. It's not the primary focus.
You know, that's the same thing people said about the BlackBerry.
Oh, I forgot about the BlackBerry. What's up with them?
Well, they're more work-based, more professional first.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That makes
but
sense.
But now they're outdated. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing. Gosh, we as consumers, we get spoiled pretty quick. As these new things come along, all of a sudden, you know, oh, we got to have it on our platform too, or I got to change platforms. Like right now, one of my problems is, you know, we use Socialcast here at LunaWeb. It's like our own microblogging platform that we use within the company. So they're like tweets just here at LunaWeb. And I got to tell you, on the Droid, my only way to view that thing is to use the web app and to look at it as a web page. Very, very tiny web page. And I'm having a hard time reading the fine print anyway.
There's not an app for that?
There's not an app yet on the Android platform.
That's ridiculous.
I tweeted at them asking them, hey, are you guys making a web app for this thing? Or is there going to be something for the Android? They responded with, but they would have a web app soon. Soon is a four-letter word.
Speaking of mobile devices,
yes.
Google Voice has recently opened up their software to anyone who wants to sign up.
That is right. That's right. It used to be, you know, you had to have an invite and all that. Speaking of Google Voice, we happen to have our interview with Jeremy over with Memphis PHP coming up in here. So let's segue to that.
We have got Jeremy Kendall on the line, and Jeremy is putting together a new tribe here in Memphis of PHP developers. Is that right, Jeremy?
That's correct, Dave. Thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad we can catch up with you. And I'm sure that you're realizing the challenge of trying to get together these people for your inaugural meeting this Thursday night.
That's correct. That's correct. Getting people together is always a challenge, but we've got a great group of folks and a good amount of RSVPs, and I'm looking forward to a very successful inaugural meeting.
And what's motivating you? I mean, I think it's a great idea, but what is motivating you to develop this group?
PHP in Memphis has always seemed like a very small community. I know several developers in Memphis, but I don't know as many as I'd like to. I have looked for PHP user groups before in town and haven't been able to find them. So I decided it was finally time for Memphis to have a PHP community that can get together and grow and then begin to expand and share the love of PHP with the Memphis open source community.
Okay, great. And let's see, I caught wind of this by seeing somebody retweet something that you had put together, I guess, on Twitter. So tell us about the types of social tools that you're using to try and find these folks and bring them all in, you know, for a get-together.
Sure. Right now I'm trying to focus on as few outlets as possible so that way I can give them the attention that they deserve and not spread myself too thin as we're just pulling this together. The first where we're focusing our most energy right now is at meetup.com. Meetup.com allows you to bring together a group, have membership, RSVP for meetings, schedule meetings, and that has been very, very helpful in organizing. Meetup also allows you to use your own URL, so memphisphp.org looks like I'm hosting the meetup.com software, so it's really slick. We're also using Google Groups as our localized mailing and discussion list, where we talk about meetings, talk about PHP. We have job opportunities posted there for local area and the Southeast region, so it's localized. And we are also on Twitter at MemphisPHP.
Okay, great, great. And we'll want to put links to these over in the show notes. So on Twitter, at MemphisPHP. And you're using meetup.com instead of Eventbrite or some other type of tool. Did you kind of shop that around, and is there a certain reason why you landed on Meetup?
There is. I did not shop it around. I attended Tech 10 in Chicago this year, which is a PHP open source conference put on by PHP Architects. And there was a forum about PHP user groups, creating them, putting them together, kind of some do's and don'ts. And meetup.com was one of the sites that was recommended, and I went straight there and began to utilize that tool.
Okay, great. We use that for our get-togethers also with the social expedition for the breakfast, as well as our twilight camps that we have once a month in the evening, and I've been using it for probably about 3 years now. And we pay whatever their minimal fee is there to use it, and have enjoyed it. So I'm glad to see that. So you're the meetup.com group. You got this to put together that first meetup. And
right.
tell us what are you trying to accomplish on this first meetup?
First meetup, I want to do a meet and greet, let everybody know about Memphis PHP, specifically what our goals are, what our plans going forward are, how we're going to be getting together, what we're going to be talking about. We're also going to have two short presentations. We're going to do some short and sweet, so you get a little bit of PHP meat here in this first meeting. And then dinner and drinks afterward to continue the conversation and do some networking.
Great. Okay. All right. And, hey, where is that going to be in case you got any last-minute listeners?
Absolutely. We are going to be at the Memphis, at the Medical Arts Building, which is right there at Methodist Hospital. The building is at Eastmoreland in Cleveland. On the back side of that building, you just make the block right at Crump Stadium. On the back side of the Medical Arts Building, there's a parking garage. Park in there and come on in. We're on the fifth floor. And there are all of those details are available at memphisphp.org. And there's a link to our discussion group there at memphisphp.org inside the event details. That will give you very specific instructions on parking, how to get in the building, how to get up to the suite, and we'll have folks doing the meet and greet thing and pointing you in the right direction.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, we will provide that link there. And Hey, one other quick question on the Google Groups.
Right.
Was that at the recommendation of this PHP group source that you had recommending
exactly.
You use Google Groups? Really? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Ben Ramsey, who founded Atlanta PHP and is now working, he's in Nashville now and has kind of rebooted Nashville PHP, made that recommendation. And he's close. He and I know each other. He and I talk. So I was kind of following his lead there with him, have been, you know, successful in Atlanta and now picking up Nashville. So I wanted to follow the lead of a successful guy just starting out.
Sure, sure. Okay. Yeah, no problem. I think Google Groups is that's kind of the evolution of the original news groups and Deja News and whatnot now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they've been around longer than the internet. I mean, longer than the web. Sorry.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, hey, you know, I definitely want to make sure that we, you know, stay tuned in to what you guys got going on there, and be supportive of your new PHP tribe as it gets put together. And I appreciate you taking the time to share with us, and look forward to checking in with you later on and see how it's going.
That's great, man. Thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to keeping in touch and meeting some more of your folks and meeting you.
Good deal. Same here, Jeremy. Thank you.
And, of course, that is tonight. Also going on tonight is the Startup Weekend Reunion over at Emerge Memphis. So for you Launch Memphians that are also listening, if you were part of Startup Weekend, or if you wanted to be there, or you just want to come out to the reunion, come on out. Unless you're a PHP developer, then you need to hike your tail over to memphisphp.org and get going with that group. So hey, Google Voice is very flexible. The way that we used it for this is you have the option to record inbound calls. And so what we did there was Jeremy called my phone, used the Google Voice number. I said, let's record it. He got a little recording that said, this call is being recorded. So you can't sneak up on record a call, as you shouldn't. And so we just agreed. So that turned it into an MP3, and we provided that to you, Ansley, and you were able to integrate it right into the podcast.
With my audio editing magic.
Magic. It is Dynamagic. All right. So the earlier you were talking about 29% of the apps. Was it like 29?
No,
29 or 29%?
It's 29. So it's not that much, really.
Okay, okay.
But
get the wrong one on there and you know.
But get the wrong one on there and you've got some spyware. But
yeah.
I mean, I guess the point really was that you need to look at what it's asking you to be able to do. You know, when I download things onto my BlackBerry and it says, do you give this app permission to do this and this and this? I'm like, yeah, I don't want to read that. Read it.
Gosh, I'm guilty. I download them. I zoom past those screens. I'm like, okay, install. Now, I don't do a whole lot of downloading of apps either. There's a few that I like, and I get the updates to them, and hopefully all is well.
You can't say we didn't warn you.
Right. So, you know, who knows? Maybe they're going to get in trouble, too, with, you know, who knows, FCC and other, you know, privacy, you know, and have to have some kind of regulation come in and say, okay, here's what it's done. And you're not adequately warning the users with your little four-digit code that they're supposed to what? Go look up and see what that means? No, I'm sorry. That's not adequate warning.
No.
Failure to warn is a big deal, both, you know, in the whole privacy space as well as consumer products and that kind of thing. So
are you getting excited about the conference you're going to?
I am.
In August?
Yeah, I am, because directly after that conference, there's actually the very next day a conference starts called GnomeDex, which if you've been in this space for a while, you know GnomeDex is a big deal out there in the Northwest space, and there's people from all over the country that go there to GnomeDex, and so I'm going to go right from a privacy thing into GnomeDex, which starts with a G. We should put a link.
I will put the link.
Thank you.
And I don't have to look it up because I have not been in this space, I guess, long enough to know.
It's well recorded. So all the presentations there are recorded. And that's great. The big draw for these conferences for me is the connections and that kind of thing. You know, but if you can't make it to GnomeDex, you can obviously watch the presentations online, both live as well as after the fact. Now, one of the deals, just to point this out, with PII 2010, is that they, because of the nature of some of these conversations and to allow some of these big boys to speak freely, my understanding is that these sessions will not be recorded so that, you know, open, casual debate can occur so we can work, you know, people can work through some of these issues on privacy.
But we would encourage the social expeditioners to comment on the podcast with any issues they would like Dave to take to the conference. And then we will get back to you probably in this podcast with what they say over there.
And the other thing, as you mentioned that, really, a question that I've had, and maybe folks can chime in on this. Do you go with expeditioners or expeditionaries? I kind of wonder. What do you think?
Leave comments.
Yeah, leave the comments. All right.
All right. Well, just so you know, upcoming, we've got the July Twilight Camp, and that's going to be on the 15th at Davis Kid at 5:30.
I'm sorry. We had an outstanding Twilight Camp. I want to throw in there.
We did. There were so many people there, and it was so much fun, and we had like four iPads.
We kind of almost broke into two groups.
Yeah,
it was kind of iPad-centric, but that was nice.
But they're pretty, so it's okay. And then we've got the August Breakfast on August 4th, and as you mentioned, the 48-hour launch reunion is tonight at Emerge Memphis.
Emerge Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Memphis PHP inaugural event also tonight.
Right on. Well, hey, so very good. So, hey, signing out for now. See you on the other side of the year, the last half of 2010 in July.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. LunaWeb is a full-service web agency, meeting Memphis's online needs since 1995. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available online at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.